Hello and welcome to Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at managing herbicide resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Councils, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. I'm excited to be joined today by Martin Esberg and Robin Dines. Robin Dines is a farm systems scientist and science impact leader for dairy farming systems within ag research. Martin is a social scientist in ag research's farm systems and environment team. Both work on the second of four research areas within the Managing Herbicide Resistance Program. Their work seeks to understand the drivers for why herbicides are used the way that they are, with a farm systems perspective. They are also aiming to see how research can support farmers and rural professionals in their strategic weed management. Thanks for joining me, Martin and Robin.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Sure.
So, Robin, can you start by explaining why the managing herbicide resistance is so important to us in New Zealand?
Thanks, Georgia. Well, firstly, I guess I should declare my colours. Having grown up on an arable farm in central Canterbury, anything to do with the arable sector is incredibly important to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I think importantly, it's the right time to look at the future of the agricultural sector. And we can see that we need to future-proof our land use options. And we're seeing a more diversified future. We're seeing a greater opportunity for our arable sector, which might well be a low-hanging fruit for New Zealand. So we need that to be future-proofed. And part of that future-proofing is to ensure that we keep herbicides as a tool for weed management. So it's about keeping as many tools in the toolbox to manage our landscapes as possible. And the Managing Herbicide Resistance Program, which is funded by MBIE in partnership with the industry, is incredibly important. And it's unique because it's strategic research that's unique in the integration of the biophysical science, which is my background, and the social sciences, which is Martin's background. So we're bringing the two together. And so what it's doing is recognising that weed management and herbicide resistance are very much about both the biophysical and the social issues and the decisions that people make at the centre of it.
Right, that's great. So is that a bit unique then from ag research's perspective, doing a project where you're integrating those factors, as you were saying, the people and the science of herbicide resistance?
It's unique for us to be working with herbicide resistance. However, across ag research, we've got a fabulous social science team. And although Martin's a relative newbie to us, we've been working in this integration of social science and biophysical science across a range of programs with our research right through to communities. So it's a real strength that ag research does bring, is that capacity to bring it together.
Right. So Martin, in relation to that decision making, how are you finding out what the drivers of herbicide use are?
Yeah, thanks, Georgia. I mean, as Robin said, so we're approaching herbicide use and herbicide resistance from a farm system perspective, and really look at a lot of interacting biophysical, social, and psychological factors that drive those decisions. So it's really about putting decisions and the whole decision-making process into context. So our approach that we follow for this project is that we identified quite a broad range of different types of farmers, rural professionals, weed experts, and then we really just sit down and listen to what they have to say on the issue of herbicide resistance. So we ask relatively broad questions, quite open-ended, in interviews, focus groups, and so on, and really dig into weed management practices, strategies. We let farmers describe the daily decision-making processes when it comes to deciding on crop rotations, weed management strategies. And Robin is really good at then prompting them to ask why and trying to figure out the reasons behind their decisions, really. So it's about listening to those perspectives and then analyzing similarities, differences, and bringing out key themes that we see across interviews. I mean, obviously, that's quite in-depth work. Over the last 4, 5, 6 months, we've primarily worked in Mid-Canterbury with a range of arable farmers, rural professionals. And so there's the caveat for, what we found so far is that it's really hard to generalize some of those findings to what's happening in the Hawke's Bay where you're from, in the Waikato and so forth. So that's where we're at the moment. But we'll obviously build on this and try to expand.
Right. So it is quite being focused on the arable communities of Canterbury within farming.
I mean, so far, and this was partly also due to COVID, that we're somewhat limited in what we could do over the last, say, 4 or 5 months. So we're quite fortunate that we could get a lot of farmers to jump online and join us in online meetings like we do today, conduct interviews. So that was good, but it was because of COVID, we kept it manageable for the region that we know and where we have existing networks. And going forward, we'll now hopefully get opportunities to also come into North Island and explore a bit further.
Oh, that's great. And you said you were starting with quite broad questions and open-ended. Were you finding quite a diversity of answers then?
Yes, and we'll probably get to some of those later. But it's a well-known fact and it's common discourse that every farm is different. Every farmer's perspective is different. Their backgrounds, their aspirations are different. What their business context look like, and especially if we look at Mid-Canterbury, what some of their rotations look like. So it's really we get a range of different answers, and it's I think up to us as social scientists and within the farm systems team to pull out some of the key themes and similarities.
Great.
That we see.
So a lot of information and recommendations for avoiding herbicide resistance has been available for quite some time. Trevor James talks a lot about that. But we're still seeing resistance becoming an issue. So what are the drivers around that? Why do farmers and growers perhaps not listen to that advice sometimes? What's going on there?
Oh, look, that's a really complex question, really the crux of our research. And I'm well familiar with Trevor and others' feedback in this regard. So it's a really good challenge for us to try to understand why some of this advice maybe isn't followed and why we're still seeing resistance come up as an issue. Before I try to answer this question, I think it's worthwhile reiterating what Chris mentioned at the last podcast, I think about 2 weeks ago, was that herbicide resistance really is a naturally occurring evolutionary process. So it's even quote-unquote off best farmers can and likely will have herbicide resistance at some stage and in some seeds. So it's then I think the management practices that that really determine if resistance can become an issue or not. So it's not just related to practice.
Right.
But to really answer your question, I think, and coming from a farm system perspective, there's obviously a lot of aspects that that we have to consider. And I think practice change and adoption are not only require advice and information. I think actually the Landwise team has put a nice paper into the FLRC conference this year that I quite enjoy reading about practice change and some of the elements there. But to pull out a few key aspects, I mean, obviously we need to have an awareness of an issue and at least some form of knowledge about it. So that's quite important. But only an awareness doesn't necessarily mean that farmers really know what he or she need to do differently within their specific farming system and on a daily basis, really within the operation. So that can really vary. I think farmers also need to have confidence in a good network of support to to really drive on-farm changes. And this, again, can vary between farmers. There's obviously personal factors, as we mentioned, like values, personal history, and so forth that come in. And I think quite an important factor is that there also needs to be a motivation or a driver to do something differently. This can be voluntary or might come in the form of mandatory regulation or contractual obligations. So there's obviously plenty of aspects to consider, and going through this list and pulling out a key few points that I think we found over the last 6 months or so, and Robin might add to that list later. I think in terms of awareness, I think quite a few farmers pointed out that in New Zealand there's quite often this belief that because we have fewer monocultures, we have quite often more complex crop and livestock rotations, that this somehow safeguards the sector against resistance. And so the bigger picture message about resistance being a big issue in US, Australia and so forth, I think is generally quite well known, but in some instances it's not really perceived as a topic or a high priority in New Zealand. So that's on the awareness side. On the knowledge side, we found that most farmers and rural professionals we talked with know about resistance issues, know some management strategies. Rural professionals we talked with equally know about herbicide resistance. And I think a lot of them feel that they follow best possible wheat management practices and current advice. But I think it's fair to say that we found quite different levels of knowledge related to herbicide resistance, and it can be quite variable. And for example, we had farmers noting, not necessarily themselves, but that they also experienced with others, that rotating chemicals, which is one of the recommendations for avoiding herbicide resistance, may not necessarily be received as rotating modes of action, but it can be rotating brand names or products that may have the same mode of action. So I think, and this is where it comes down to what's actually the level of that knowledge, and then awareness isn't enough in this case. So I think there is and continues to be an ongoing need for good information, good knowledge transfer, and a good education for the sector. And I think, how we might do this is probably a topic for another podcast altogether. Mm-hmm. Also, in terms of knowledge, what we found is, I think it's quite important, as I mentioned, to also find out how some of the farmers can take some of the more generic recommendations and advice and then really implement it in their farm system. And we found that there's some uncertainty and lack of confidence in then seeing what this means in terms of other wheat management strategies, like cultivation techniques, and then how this relates to other factors in their farm system. Talk about crop rotations, how this might impact contracts and so forth.
So there's a need for that integrated advice that takes account for those other factors then?
Absolutely. And I think advice has to some degree, it's similar in other fields, not just herbicide resistance, but it has to be tailored to work within an existing system. So that advice always comes into an existing farming operation, existing farm system, and any changes that are made have to work within this system. So it's not just a case of changing the one practice, but then also seeing within the system what are some of the ramifications from that. The other factor we noted, I talked about confidence to change, and I think, again, this really varies between farmers and depends on the level of expertise, quality of their support networks, and robustness of their planning. And I think Chris mentioned in the last podcast as well the importance of good record keeping for decision making, and that's certainly also what we found. And I would add to Chris's account that it's not only keeping good records, but then also strategically using those records in decision making. So quite often we heard that farmers are really good at keeping records, but then not going back to those to then make strategic decisions across multiple years or different crop rotations and so forth. And we're currently brainstorming ideas how some record keeping softwares like ProductionWise might be helpful in this regard, but that's probably a little bit down the track. And just one final comment on the motivation to change. I think that's really a difficult factor in considering what the drivers for specific practices are. I mean, what we've seen is, or what we've heard, is that for some farmers, herbicide resistance is not really seen as a top priority, so that it isn't currently a problem in New Zealand or on their farm. And some farmers even noted that maybe a change in regulation or certification standards might be a higher risk or might emerge before resistance comes up as an issue, where we see a ban, for example, as we've seen overseas for glyphosate come in. Some farmers also mentioned conflicting priorities in there. So if we see a need to limit cultivation for soil health, carbon sequestration, and so forth through, for example, direct drilling, then this obviously requires herbicides. So there's, there can be some conflicting priorities there. I mean, beyond those, I think more fundamentally, it's quite challenging for some farmers and in some operations, as it is for all of us, to justify a cost now and an additional effort now to prevent a potential impact in the future. So I think there's a need what the project is doing to do good sampling, to show where the issues are, to build up some of those scenarios and then make this an issue that we can talk about and that we can consider management strategies for. So yeah, I think these are some key points that we found, and there's obviously plenty more. There's other technical and biophysical factors that Robin can elaborate on. For example, we see that some of our most valuable crops within rotations, for example, grass seed crops, by their nature could really become a weed in our rotations, and especially in regions that have limited rotations. Robin, do you have the numbers on top of your head about ryegrass seeds?
Yeah, interesting, Martin. You know, one of the conversations we had with Trevor James, and actually interestingly with a number of our farmers, was if you're got a 3,000 kilos of ryegrass seed coming off in a crop, you could be leaving behind as many as 800 kilos of ryegrass seed per hectare, depending on a range of factors. If we think about the fact when we sow a pasture, we're only sowing 15 kilos of seed. So if you look then to the genetics of the development of resistance, we can see why it's challenging. We can also see, though, Martin, how many of the farmers are highly aware of this, and they've got a lot of strategies. They're thinking ahead, they're planning, they're figuring out how they're going to manage risks, and really focused on being aware of what's going on in their businesses.
Okay. So do you have some thoughts on the final point that Martin mentioned, Robin, about the motivation to change? What do you think is going on there?
Look, I think one of the things as a scientist who trained in the biophysical side of science, it's really easy to understand how to grow crops. It's really difficult to understand people. And so there are multiple motivations. And it's been fascinating for me to be part of these interviews. We see the complexity of these farmed businesses. We see the sheer number of decisions that farmers have to make. These are decisions about environment, economics, social, all of those things. Within all of that, they see the protection that comes from the kind of sophisticated rotations they're running. They see the protection that comes from the toolbox that they have currently, and they see that everything is working currently. So should it be surprising that it's lower down on the priorities? I don't think so. And I think one of the things that makes me see, though, Georgia, is the point Martin made about confidence. And we can't underestimate that farmer-to-farmer learning as a way to get confidence. And many of the farmers talk to us about other farms they knew where resistance had emerged. And I guess that's Martin's point, is that we see resistance on the very best farms. We see resistance across the spectrum. So it will occur across the range of farm types and farm practices. So it's how we best build and keep the resilience, keep those tools available right into the future, what's needed. And part of that is awareness, and part of it's understanding when you need to be motivated. And some farmers did talk, Martin, about they have individual paddocks that they're concerned about. They've got a particular weed in a particular paddock. And so they are quite focused on that. And I guess what we need to see is all of our farmers having that same understanding of their risks and being able to act early, act before it's a major issue.
And do you think that research by Chris Budenhagen and FAR has helped farmers with the awareness side of things to recognise that herbicide resistance is potentially already quite significant out there in the arable areas of Canterbury?
I think these are important messages in the journey. And I think particularly the work of Chris and FAR, which is starting to give us some numbers from my perspective, is always great. Look, we don't think we've got a problem. Interestingly, here is how it's growing. And obviously, if we could continue that, Martin, over time, so we could over space, so more throughout New Zealand and across time, that would be so powerful.
Great. And Robin, do you want to expand on any other insights that you've come across in this research of talking just with such a wide range of farmers on herbicide resistance?
Look, it's been a fascinating journey, and I guess from my perspective, no surprises. No surprises. Some of the insights that have been interesting is on some of the farms that we've interviewed, the sheer number of voices who are contributing to knowledge and opinion that some farmers are dealing with. So some farmers had four different seed company reps, specialist growers, agronomists coming onto their farms, in addition to an independent advisor. So farmers talked about weighing up the knowledge from each of the different people that were coming onto their farm. And mostly they were highly respectful of the knowledge that the people brought onto the farm. They tended to have trusted people that they listened to first, or they would check in on. Some of the variability that we saw in knowledge, for example, as Martin has already mentioned, in rotating chemicals and being clear whether they were rotating a chemical or a mode of action. The variability in the record keeping, and as Martin said, both the tactical use of it, knowing what I've done today, but also more strategically using that to inform my future, that was highly variable, and I'm not surprised. And I think Martin talked about opportunity, and I think here's where we need to think about technologies. How do we support people in their record keeping? What is the, with all the different technologies they have available, are we doing the best to make that really easy, both to record and to recall? So I think that's something that an insight that I've seen. And aligned with that, there's currently a strong reliance on intuitive practices, those things I know that have worked previously, and on remembering what I've done. So I admire people who've clearly got a better memory than I have of what they did yesterday or last week. That came through quite strongly with a lot of the farmers we interviewed. Again, if we tie that up with the tech, can we make it easier? So that was some of the insights that we saw. The other insights I saw is the amount of the excellence in thinking among so many of our farmers. They're extraordinary people dealing with really complex businesses, and they're working in their businesses. They're not just standing back. They don't have that luxury. They're in the business. They're making the decisions and they're doing the doing. And we have to think about that. And these are the things I'm challenging Martin with. And I'm having a great deal of entertainment challenging Martin because this is such an opportunity, again, for this integrated piece. So he and I are working together on this, and we're challenging each other around what we're hearing. And we're fortunate that Martin, most of the farmers have agreed that we can come back and talk with them again. So we want them to challenge us. You know, we want to go back and say, here's where our thinking's at, and get that challenge, because that will help us shift our thinking and hopefully come up with some real opportunities for the industry.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Robin. So I guess moving elaborating on the point that you made that many voices are contributing to the same topic and farmers are having to field opinions on the same matter from a whole lot of different and qualified people. Martin, who do you think's making the critical decision on herbicide use? And does it vary from scenario to scenario?
I don't think the decision-making per se varies. I mean, ultimately, it's the farmer or farm manager that makes the decision or has to make the decision. And I think they're, in almost all cases, they're probably most suitable to make this decision. They're the most knowledgeable people when it comes to their farm system, when it comes to their business context. So it is ultimately farmers or farm managers. But I think we have to start looking a little bit behind this, and that's obviously the face of the decision. But what Robin and I noted, decision making can be split, obviously, between people on farm. So especially when it comes to spraying, we might have a son doing the spraying and deciding what herbicide goes on while not driving other decisions. So it's then also interesting to see what are some of the personal relationships on farm. Is there good communication between people driving different types of decisions? And then we also noted some farmers being quite reliant on spraying contractors and the advice that they give. So I think it's really about considering the network that's behind a farmer's decision, the ultimate step. And as Robin mentioned, it can be four, I think we even had someone say five, field reps, independent agronomists, it can be farmer groups that provide advice. So I think especially in cases where crops are grown under contract, where a lot of advice comes in from seed reps, it is still the farmer making the ultimate decision, but there's a lot of drivers behind this. So it's for us, it's about understanding this context, understanding the farm system, the business context. And then just really it's up to the project and our work to figure out with the rural professionals, with the farmers, what might support their decision making, how we can make a contribution to help them, because they're obviously the ones who have to drive those decisions and are best suited to drive them.
Great. And so I guess moving on from now, you're looking to expand into different regions. Where are you going next?
Oh, you're putting us on the spot.
We're
in the process of working through this and seeing what's required. I mean, initially, before COVID came in, we had plans to have a very different context and go up into the Waikato and work with maize growers, where we see very very different type of farm systems, different contract structures and so forth around maize being grown. So that's something we'll explore over the next months. And as Robin said, we really want to keep on working with the networks that we've already built up, and then not just give recommendations from a few interviews, but then co-design with farmers what we might do with this knowledge that we build up now, and really have them challenge us and work between them also to see how we might move forward.
Great. That sounds really exciting. We'll definitely keep an eye on your research and look out for updates. Thank you so much, Robin and Martin.
Thanks, Georgia. Appreciate it.
Thanks Georgia.